Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rod Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Rod coming to you from The Rad Life. And thank you again for joining us this week. We had a great show last week, and we got a good one for you guys this week as well.
You got a full house here today, too.
We do.
I didn't get a chance last week to formally welcome you to OC Talk Radio. This grew out of conversations that Rod and I both had here. We're both men of a certain age, shall we say that? And the challenges of the sandwich generation, you know, parents living, and I have to become a parent to my I have to become a parent to my parent, and then boomerang kids coming back, and we're going to, you're lucky us, we're all going to live to be 100, and how are we going to pay for it, and
yeah,
all these things.
Don't let him fool you. He likes to be a parent. He's being a parent to me, too.
That's right. Yeah. I'm trying to guide
He's guiding me. Yes, he's the Obi-Wan
That's right.
to this show. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, we do have a full house, literally. We have a great show. We got Sandy McDaniel Laughlin and her husband Greg Laughlin from All Inclusive Senior Advisors, and we've got Chris Gutierrez from Southern California Senior Resources. And really the focus today is we wanted to get a lay of the land of how things are in terms of housing options for seniors and as people with special needs as they get either older or have medical issues that come up, and just kind of get a measure of the environments that they have available for them, how they go about it. And then we also want to talk about some options that are out there that maybe don't get discussed a lot. And we have the benefit of people that are very, you know, professionals in their fields, have a depth of experience on the medical side, and also some ownership on the board and care. So thank you, Sandy and Greg, for joining us. Love having you here today.
Thank you very much for asking us to join you.
Yes, Rod, thank you very much. We're happy to be here.
Sandy, you and I were talking yesterday, and you brought up a thing called SB 648.
SB 648 is a bill that's been introduced by Senator Mendoza, and it's basically to license and hold accountable placement agencies. The placement agency business has been around for quite some time, and it's never been regulated. So there are great places out there like mine and Chris's that work very hard to do a good job in finding placement for seniors, but there's also places out there that I've been told that will place people in the wrong placement intentionally and then get a second referral fee to place them again, and that there's also places out there that, there's actually one situation right now in San Diego where they pressured a woman to give them power of attorney to make decisions for her. And that's unacceptable.
That's so absolutely unacceptable. I mean, and these are people that are at a very vulnerable. I always go back in my own mind to my grandfather and grandmother, who, you know, fortunately, you know, aged in at home, and we had an extended family, and everybody kind of took care of each other, kind of, if you could almost say, old world style. But I always look back at that vulnerable person in the later parts of their life, and that is absolutely unconscionable. I hate to use the word criminal for the lack of, you know, maybe basis for it legally, but it is almost criminal in my mind for somebody to take advantage of people. And last show we had, we had the Kaysen Foundation here, and they were talking about elder abuse. And so it's amazing how much an underreported thing is prevalent out there. And the more you talk to people, they share similar experiences sometimes. So give me a little bit, though, Sandy, a bit of your about the background, so people know where you're coming at from. How did you get involved in this?
To make a long story short, I graduated a year early from high school and went to work in a nursing home and fell in love taking care of older adults at 16, and then was fortunate enough to be offered a full ride to Chapman University on a music scholarship. So I probably would have gone into medicine or nursing in the beginning. Didn't do that, but then found myself many years later working in a retirement community, and I have been the executive director of several large retirement communities, both here in California and Ohio. I'm an RCFE administrator, and then I fulfilled a dream about a year ago of going back to school and becoming a nurse. So I bring a lot of experience to the table because I have worked with lots and lots of people that just don't know what to do. And that's what I do every day, as I take phone calls from people that have no clue where to turn.
And how long have you been doing this?
We started our business about 6 months ago.
As your business, but you've been involved in the industry.
24 years.
Okay. So that's great. Thank you. I think it's important for people to know that when we're talking, we're just, you know, we're not just pulling people off, you know, from the sidewalk, or, you know, we meet downstairs and basically, hey, let's talk about aging people.
Right.
You know, these are very qualified people with a lot of experience that we're bringing here on the show. And the whole purpose is really to engage the audience and put out into the dialogue these issues that everybody's going to face at some point or the other, and that really we are so unprepared for. And the awareness that we're hoping to impart in these episodes or these show episodes hopefully will make that transition, which in many cases is very emotional, in some cases even traumatic, somewhat easier because people are somewhat pre-prepared for it or know where to go.
It's very frightening for families when, and typically what happens, it's the crisis. Mom has had a fall.
Yeah.
She's in the hospital and the doctor is saying mom can't go home. And this is the first time that anyone has ever thought, well, we thought mom could live in the house for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
What do you mean she can't go home? And now all of a sudden they are bombarded with what do we do. And the typical discharge planner in the hospital, they are very, very busy people, wonderful people, but busy people. So they typically hand them a guide and say, here's a guide of places that offer care. Go out and start looking.
Right.
And they have no clue what they're looking for.
So almost, and Chris and I talked about this yesterday when we were prepping for the show, is that basically it's almost the equivalent of me basically looking for rental apartments.
Absolutely.
I'm going to call an agency that basically emails me a PDF, or back in the old day, I'm aging myself here. But it is an aging show, so I think it's a safe room for me in. Okay. Paul's pointing at me. Hey, I'm still younger. Okay.
That's right.
So, okay. But,
you young kid here.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Obi-Wan. But the thing about it is, you know, you basically are handed a list of everything sort of in a zip code. It there's no personal attention. There's no, you know, is it appropriate? You know, and it almost sounds like it's the same thing that when people call these 800 number, for example, or, you know, that are senior resource, quote unquote, that in many cases that's all we're really getting.
Absolutely. Typically, the 800 numbers have contracted with communities to say, listen, you know, we'll bring you business, and you call in on the 800 number, you live in a certain zip code. They blast fax or mass email out to communities, and then marketing directors at communities start making telephone calls. And it may not be a correct placement. It may have nothing to do.
Can I give you a real-life example?
Yes.
I'm not supposed to pipe in. I'm just the everyman engineer here. But
he did put up his hand, though.
I lived this several times. I'm 59. When my father fell and suddenly couldn't, he was in his 90s, couldn't live alone anymore. He's in the hospital, and he's like, he can't go home. All right, what do we do? And so the social worker at the nursing home, rehabilitation, whatever you want to call it, he was in the hospital, and then he went in this, handed me a list. And I start calling them. And they're saying, well, can you do this and can you do that? I'm like, I don't know. Well, that's going to affect the price. Well, let's give me a range. $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 and
yep.
Up here. I said, okay, great. Well, he's got Medicare. Oh, no, none of this is covered under any of that. None of this is covered under that. I said, he doesn't have a lot of money or anything here. I don't have a lot of money to $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 a month. And then I said to him, I called a couple of these places and I said, what do people do? And they said, well, he has a house, doesn't he? He said, yeah, he saved his whole life and he has a house. Hand us the house. I said, that's it? What if he lives 6 months? Well, then we win. What if he lives 16 years? Then you win. I said, this is just Russian roulette. We're just going to hand you this house, the only asset he worked his whole life for, so that you can, you know, feed him and change his diapers now here. And lucky me, he died. And lucky for him, he died. so we didn't have to go through this. And I thought, how awful. The lucky answer for both of us was he died.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, we're just not prepared for this aging boom that's happening. We're not, you know, the last of the baby boomers turned 50 2014, and now we are on a path of all of these people that are going to need care and help, all the current people that need care and help, and as a society, we are not prepared for it at all.
And it forces us to mix family with business in a very unsavory way. You like the example you were saying, Paul, with, you know, now you have to decide how much is this going to be worth? Can he stay on?
And So we're horse trading.
Well, he died.
I mean, yeah, so we're horse trading. Okay, so how about if I give you this? How about if I give you this? Well, maybe we'll move him down to, I mean, my father was a very dignified, he was an executive with a car company. He thought he had his whole life figured out. He saved for his house. He had a little bit of cash left, and he had Social Security and a retirement. He's good for his whole life. What he wasn't ready for was long-term health care. And the thought of it made him cringe. He told me many times, I'd rather be dead than go through that. And I know why, because then I've seen my aunt. I've just repeated this whole thing the last year. My late mother's sister's still alive. She's in her 90s, poor as a church mouse, fell again, started the whole thing again, and now we're trying to debate the whole thing again. What do we do with her? And she's my maiden aunt. There's nobody else to draw upon or do anything here. Other family members suddenly like, well, gee, good luck.
Well, Paul, let me ask you something, because
you're living it.
Your personal story has come up already when we first talked, and we've mentioned it probably on both of these shows so far. You've gone through this twice now.
Yes.
At least,
I really went through it three, because my mother had Parkinson's disease, and we were facing that. But again, lucky us, she went in the hospital, got so weak, and got pneumonia and died.
Okay, so over the period of time which you have dealt with this mm-hmm. in two or three cases, how long a period of time has that been? I have a reason for why I'm asking.
Okay, my dad died 2 years ago, my aunt was this year, and my mother a couple years. So about 4 or 5 years, this all hit at once. It was like a tsunami of it, and I'm an only child, so I bore the brunt of it. Two parents and then a maiden aunt.
Okay, so 5 years, and we've been hearing about awareness of boomers and awareness of aging, and oh, all of a sudden it's a new frontier, and we're doing all this stuff and so mm-hmm. forth. From your own personal experience, and I'm kind of putting mm-hmm. you on the
spot. Sure, I'm happy to share this.
All right, the last time you went through it, mm-hmm. did you find it any different from the first time you went through it?
No. Very cold, very uncaring, filled with confusion, and nobody knows, and they hand you a list and say, good luck, see ya. For example, the hospitals. My father fell. Okay, he was at I don't want to pick on hospitals. He was in Eisenhower, world-class hospital out in the desert, Palm Desert.
Rancho Mirage.
Rancho Mirage, actually. Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. I think my dad lived in Palm Desert, so I think of that whole area as Palm Desert. He lived in Sun City, you know. So they said he's got bleeding in the brain, but he's stabilized, so we got to get him out of here. I said, you got to get him out of here. What do we do? Well, we'll put him in a rehab center. They put him in a rehab center, and he laid in bed all day and got huge bed sores. They had to put him back in the hospital.
Yep.
And they healed they sort of healed the bed sores. I mean, they literally had to operate a size of a silver dollar to remove. It was horrible on his rear end and stuff. I don't want to get too graphic, but it was horrible. And then they said, this is as good as we can do. We got to send him home again. I said, home? He doesn't know who he is. He's got still healing bed sores. Well, take him in. Well, I don't have any place to take him in. Who gets to stay home, my wife or I, and give up her job? Who pays for the day-to-day health care? Well, then put him in a facility. $7,000, $8,000 a month. Who gets to pay for that? Hand him the house. You know, one horrible shock after another, mm-hmm. and nobody, zero. They kind of say, well, that's great. Next, you know, gotta get on with this. And then you try and talk to friends and family, and they're all like, yeah, that's really great, Paul. Hey, I got to get going here. Nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody's prepared for it. Nobody has the money for it. It's a shock when it happens. You have to stop your life completely, and nobody really wants to hear about it.
Well, that's why we're here talking about it.
Yeah.
And it brings up an interesting point about preparing for it. You need to have an estate plan in place for part of it. I mean, if you go dementia, it's not going to help you much.
Perhaps long-term health care, all these things
right.
that you never
right.
thought of.
An advanced health care directive so that you can decide how you want to end your life.
Oh, that was a fun one. So my dad didn't have a health care directive, okay? So he goes in the hospital. Now, my dad's a really tough, rough... I don't know how to explain this with the emotional challenge you go through. My dad was always this domineering, dominant, powerful guy. Fought in World War II, bomber pilot, you know, worked his way up from the ghetto, became an executive. I looked up to this guy. I don't get choked up here, but all of a sudden he's a little baby. I wasn't ready for that.
No.
I'm taking care of him. I'm telling him what to do. Now he goes in the hospital, and that first night they said, I think he's going to die. Like, holy guacamole, I can't believe this. And they said, so we can go in and operate and get this, whatever it is, aneurysm out. What's the choice? Oh, he'll probably go blind. So I'm going to operate and make him blind, or I'm going to let him die. And I said, I don't know what to do. And they said, we're not going to do it. I said, you tell me what to do, doc. Oh, no, we can't tell you what to do. You're the heir. You're the kid. You figure it out. We can't give you any advice one way or another. And for a while, then they couldn't do anything. And we had to figure out, because there was no health care directive, I had to figure all this stuff out, and what would he want to do? And so I'm deciding life or death issues that I wasn't prepared, I didn't know enough about, and I wasn't prepared to make those decisions, mentally, physically informed decisions. And so we just flew by our seat, and I ended up saying, don't do anything, let's see what happens. And miraculously, he got better, but that only lasted a few months.
And I'll tell you, Paul, I had a similar situation as far as the insisting on the health directives and having them put in place. You know, there's a living trust, there's all the stuff with my folks, but those directives were not in place. And we sat down and we talked, and it wasn't a comfortable conversation.
No, I mean, my dad ever wanted to talk about these things? No.
No, but it's a very difficult conversation for any adult child to have with their parents.
Yeah.
The parents,
what are you waiting for me to die?
Feels like the child, you don't want to, can I have your money when you go? Or you don't have, you feel like you're greedy to discuss.
Can't you wait? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm in good health. You can wait.
And they don't want to discuss their mortality. But more than anyone does, you know?
But you know what, guys? I'll say this, okay? Yes, there is that. But I think in my case, I identified that it was my own guilt of not wanting to come across as... it was almost like crossing a personal privacy line.
Very much
with
so.
Your parents, out of all possible people, right?
Yeah.
But the alternative was, okay, and maybe it's selfish on my part, but the alternative was that if I didn't do that... And I'm being facetious when I say selfish. But if I didn't do that, when came time, heaven forbid, that we actually had to peer into what their wishes were,
right.
And they weren't able to express that for themselves, we would find ourselves exactly where you were, Paul. And that is, I keep reminding people, the injury, the accident, the fall, the aneurysm, whatever. That's a starting point of emotional turmoil.
Yes,
you got all this other stuff that comes in as well. While you're dealing with that.
So we've got a full-time job. My wife's got a full-time job. And we're supposed to stop everything. He's 2 hours away. I hear people that's 2 days away or 2 states away or whatever here.
Yeah.
And I've got to somehow drop everything and handle this. That's a huge crisis emotionally, physically, financially. Then I have to suddenly go in and start parenting him, which I'm not prepared for. Then I have to start making decisions about life or death issues and what's going to happen that I had no knowledge about. And they're just throwing it at you. We got to know in 10 minutes we're going to operate or not. And what do we do? And how to sign this and blah, blah, blah. And what's the choices and everything here? And then I'll give you the worst just so everybody, you can all groan and say, I hope this doesn't happen to you because I hope it doesn't. This took 6 months for him to die. And never went home from the moment he hospital nursing, just never got back home. Just was a vicious circle. And so finally, in the last nursing home, he died. He had a heart attack and died. And or his heart stopped, which I think he just willed. He was so ready to go.
Well, and, after that, for 6 months, sure. I mean.
And he started telling me, well, I'm never going home. I said, don't say that, Dad. You're getting better. No, this is it. And, wow, all this stuff. So all that stuff's happening. I took the, you have this do not resuscitate order as part of that?
Yeah, I do.
I took it on, I took it off, I took it on, I took it off. He's getting better, I took it off. Because I don't want to be, just pull the plug on him, give me his house, I'm ready, I'm going to start crying here, but I wanted to be the good son,
right?
I wanted to honor him and what he wanted. And so at the end, they said he's getting better. And I pulled it off. And the next day, he had a heart attack, and they called me up and said, well, he almost died, but we brought him back, but he's a vegetable now. And so for 2 weeks, I had to anguish, what do we do? And I had to do... The one thing he told me a million times, if you don't learn from anything, don't get to the part you got to pull the plug. I had to pull the plug.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the most horrendous. I thought, oh, my God. In the ultimate end, I failed. The only thing he empowered, trusted me to do is don't let me turn into a vegetable and have to pull the plug. He begged me a million times. And in my foolishness of thinking he was getting better, I took the order off. And that happened.
I don't think it's foolishness. I think it's human nature that you're going to want to wish that kind of to
happen.
Positive response. Yeah. Hey, parents, if you're listening, don't put your kids in that situation. Identify what it is that you want to do and what your wishes are. Because we as children will anguish. We will anguish like crazy over these decisions. And I think at the end, ultimate independence choice decision making, you tell us what you want and put it in a format that is, because even, you know, in some cases, even when it's on paper, it's hard to enforce, you know, depending on who you're dealing with.
Oh, I had it on and I took it off. I had it on, took it off. And you're just not prepared to handle this, folks. And that's why I share this stuff so openly. I mean, it took me a long time to talk about this, but I just feel like I should be an advocate and on TV and talking about this because there are tons of people heading for a train wreck, baby boomers, and you have no clue what you're headed for and how hard it's going to be. Now, and I hear it ripping apart families where the sisters and brothers say, no, let dad die, and the other one says, no.
Exactly, different opinion on what should be done, and nobody is clearly put in charge. Yeah, so, Sandy, I'm going to come back to this. Okay, so here's a perfect example of someone who is facing this. And we always, you know, jokingly say, well, it's not about me, it's about so-and-so, my friend or my parent or whatever, right?
It was me.
It's not me who's dealing with it, right? But today, okay, if somebody found themselves in Paul's position, and let's just say that's not hospitalization, let's just say it's assisted living, putting somebody in a home, for sort of use a generic terminology, what are the options, and how can they go about that safely without feeling that they've become, again, a victim of one more thing that is wrong because nobody tells them. I mean, I think when you find yourself in a situation like Paul's found himself, you're looking for genuine help.
Absolutely. And Paul, my heart goes out to you because both my parents are deceased now, and I went through the same thing with both of them. And here I am, a professional in the industry, and was just heartbroken and would walk out of their rooms crying each time, thinking, I'm now the parent to my parents, and I'm telling them what to do, and it was the worst feeling in the world. Even though I knew that what I was doing was right, I was still having to be the parent, and I didn't want that. I didn't want it at all. You know, my best advice to people is, obviously, you have to start planning ahead. In this society, we don't want to talk about death, and we don't want to talk about aging. And we have to start thinking about the fact that we're all moving towards the end of our lives, whether we want to accept that or not. And part of the thing you can do is really start to have these conversations as a family. You need to start these conversations before something bad happens.
Right.
So that at least you've started, you know, talking about it. And, you know, I advise my clients when they come to me, I said, you know, this is excellent because, you know, you're making your choices now. You're not leaving it to your children to have to make it for you. You're going out. You're looking at places. You're making a decision. I've got plan A, plan B, plan C. If this happens, I know what I want. We get it into writing, and then this is what will happen. But as I said, so often it's the crisis. And, you know, my recommendation to families is work with an agency like mine or with Chris's or another reputable placement agency out there, which will do the legwork for you, then you have to be very smart, and you have to go and you have to check licensing numbers. You have to go to the facilities at different times. You have to talk to the residents. You have to talk to the families. You need to ask for telephone numbers of families that live there or that have family members that live at that community so that you can get from them, hey, what's good about this place? What's bad about this place? You've got to do your homework because they will always put their dog and pony show on. I've worked in these facilities. I know when somebody's there to take a tour, everything's the best of the best. But you know what? Mistakes are going to happen and things are going to happen. And I always tell families it's how that mistake is handled is what makes the difference between a good and a bad
facility. Can I give you one? I'm sorry to
keep
butting
in
here. Please, don't go ahead. But it seems like I'm in this now here. I'm going to sound really cynical. I didn't see a good facility. With my mother, My mother and dad and aunt have been in and out of facilities over 15 times. Been to all the ones that are in the desert. There's three or four or five of them. Never really had what I would call a good experience. And here's why. I felt and quickly discovered if I wasn't there and as a personal advocate, mm-hmm. as a as their own, what would you call them, protector or something there, mm-hmm. the pills didn't get delivered. My dad would cry for an hour to get water. We'll get to you. My aunt this last time was in a facility. She's in her 90s. They gave her, she had fallen, so she had she cracked a rib. So they put an ice pack on it, and they left it there all night long, and it melted. And when I came in the next morning, she's sitting in a pool of cold water.
Cold water.
And I thought, and I just screamed and said, come on, guys. Doesn't anybody check on her? No.
Well, and you're absolutely right, Paul. There aren't that many good facilities out there. There's some that are excellent, but I would say that, remember, this is a big business now. Seniors are a big business, and there are going to be lots of people that get into this business that all they're thinking are dollar signs. They're not thinking about the fact that they are caring for human beings. And I can tell you that I have left employers over that reason, because money was more important to that big facility than it was to doing the right thing for the resident. And my husband can tell you, he's seen me twice walk out the door and say, if you're not going to take care of the resident, then I'm not going to work here because I can't
do
this.
And here's another thing I've never understood, and you can explain this to me. There's another shock that came to me. All right, so my dad, my mom, my aunt go into these facilities. Her doctor, they all have wonderful world-class doctors. There's some incredible doctors out in that area, as you'd expect. Mm-hmm. The doctor can't come into the facility. They're in no man's land. They're in a black hole. The doctor cannot come and see you once you're checked in. You are now in the care of the doctor for that facility. And the doctor says, no, her cardiologist can't come in. His doctor can't even walk in the door. So, and I go say, well, he's over there. Don't you want to see him? When he gets out, have him see me. They can recommend pills. They can say something. You can take them out of the facility over there by ambulance for a couple $100 a pop. But they cannot walk in the door. And the doctors at these facilities, I don't know who they are, but they come once and see you for 5 minutes, and you could be there for 5 months, and they'll never see you again.
I want to be sure to say, you know, like Sandy mentioned, there are facilities that are good.
I'm sure.
But obviously there's enough that are not, that it would cause something like the regulation of that industry to be something that is basically legally being pursued.
Right.
And kind of coming full circle, let's talk about that. I mean, what is this SB 648 supposed to do?
Well, SB 648 is to take companies like mine and Chris's and regulate them so that they have a responsibility to be serving the senior and their family to the best of their ability in finding placement.
Yeah, I think one thing, too, it's transparency. To tell you, you know, Rod, just so you know, this is how we're structured. If your dad moves into this facility, we get a certain percentage.
Right.
So I think transparency is one of the biggest vices of the bill.
Well, let me ask you, Chris, because we talked about this, all of us, before. You know, before we go to the break, I want to just give people something to chew on for a minute. What is a standard fee?
You know,
when somebody gets placed in a facility.
So I've been doing this now about 14 years. I came from a nationwide company. We were doing half of the first month. Somebody moves in for $4,000 a month. The agency gets $2,000, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so that 50% was the standard, mm-hmm. and then it's gotten bumped up dramatically since the inception.
So, what is the most outrageous?
Most one is 120% of the first month.
120% of the first month.
120%. So it's possible for this to get more than 100%. Okay. To this agency.
Well, when we come back, we're going to take a break here, Paul. But when we come back, I really want to understand that what is being given in return for that 120% of the first month in order to place somebody. You know, is it qualified? Is it in-depth one-on-one? Is it just simply saying, hey, I got a referral for you, and when you check them in and they sign on the dotted line, you owe me 120%? We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with everybody.
All right. Let's go back into that. You know, and I hope people don't get turned off by being blunt and be. You said something. I'll leave you with this, and I'll try and stay shut up here. But the other thing that shocked me as I got into this is we as baby boomers of the Peter Pan generation, we don't want to think or talk about death. It's never going to happen to us, never going to happen to our parents. Mommy and Dad are going to be there forever. That's the way I felt. Right. My dad's 93, and he's living on his own, and I'm thinking, he's great. This is wonderful, you know. And no, he wasn't great. He was falling a lot. So the other thing that struck me, we're good Irish Catholics, so of course when my father died, we had to go through the whole funeral and the mass and everything here.
The wake,
everything, the read the rosary and everything. This is like and everybody said to me, oh, that's horrible. I would never do that. You get them in the ground as quick as you can. You bury their ashes and it's over. They literally just disappear one day and there's a little service for 15 minutes and everybody's looking at their watch. I said, no, my dad was very clear about this. He wants the full trimmings here and he wants to go through the whole deal. And I found it very cathartic, very hard, but it really, there's a purpose to funerals and dragging it all out.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And if you rob yourself and their friends and everybody,
absolutely.
About a month after that, one of my friend's mother died, who was a wonderful woman, and they had a service that lasted 10 minutes at the, you know, nobody saw her. They just immediately burned her up, turned her into ashes, took the ashes to a urn, and in 15 minutes we all said goodbye, and we cried for 15 minutes, and we went and ate food, and we left. And I thought, that's all her life meant?
Right.
Come on. So, I don't know, and the last point I make about this, we can't even call it what is, for, to this day, people say, I'm sorry your dad passed. My dad didn't pass, not like pass away. He died.
Yeah, he died.
Why can't we say this?
Yeah.
He died.
Yeah.
He lived a great life, and he died.
We can't say that, right?
No.
We all somehow believe we're going to get out of this thing alive,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
People, we are not getting out of this thing alive.
Okay?
And I'll pick on our own state of California, okay? California, I know we don't do season changes, especially
right.
Southern California. We don't take out summer clothes and put them away and
right.
put winter clothes in place. We don't, you know,
there's put no seasons.
No salt on driveways because we don't deal with change.
Right.
Okay? Well, guess what? You want to be empowered and independent and powerful in all your life? This is one of these things that you can be empowered and powerful about. Instead of having our heads buried in the beautiful beach sand, you know, and just avoiding this thing until it's too late. And now we've got, you know, Cindy was saying, if somebody now is having an accident, they are basically taken, you know, we call 911. They're taken to the hospital. They're taken care of
for a while.
Momentarily, right? Yeah. Now they have to be discharged because guess what? Health insurance is very tight and it doesn't cover you to stay there forever
they
and
kick
recover.
You out as soon as you stabilize.
Right.
Yeah.
So you got to go recover somewhere else.
Right.
Well, now, used to be you could go recover in the home. In your own home.
Yeah.
Well, if your home is not ready, they can't discharge you to that.
No.
And we, on sort of on the design side and maybe the aging in place component, you get that fire drill call. You know, we got 10 days to retrofit somebody's house so they can be discharged to it.
Handicapped toilets, handicapped bars, ramps.
So I've always said the time when your home needs to be your safe haven the most, and because you have had an emotional or physical or both impact your life, you get discharged to your home if you're lucky and you don't go to the rehab or, you know, sort of a halfway transition space. You go to your home. Because I came in a fire drill, not in a plenty of time to prepare properly, I have basically damaged your safe haven in order to provide you with some sort of safety so that some caregiver can actually come in and not feel like it's an unsafe work environment and provide service in that home.
And I'll give you the other thing that I was shocked at. Okay, and my dad's a powerful guy, always took care of himself. That's the way I saw him, and I thought he would just die in his sleep someday, that everybody's fantasy. When you can't go to the bathroom by yourself, you can't get I forgot, there's four or five things that they look at. One is personal maintenance. Can you go to the bathroom? One is getting physically up and out of the bed. One is feeding yourself. And I forgot what the other is. Like three or four basic things that you just take for granted. And my dad got to a point, I probably should have seen this before. That's why he's falling. He was falling, getting in and out of the bed. He was falling, getting in and out of the shower. Mm-hmm. He was falling, getting in. He eventually fell, pulling something out of the refrigerator, and it stuck, and he yanked on it and flew backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's those things that you take for granted, and his house wasn't prepared for any of that. He wasn't prepared for that. So you say, get somebody to move in with him. Oh, my goodness, we tried that for a while. You know, a ton of money, and they just sit there and watch television all day.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's bring it back to kind of where we left off before the break. So you contact an agency, or you somehow find yourself about to place a loved one in a home.
Right.
Okay. And there is that finder's fee, I'll call it, for lack of a better word.
I didn't know there were agencies until this moment. I didn't know. I just was handled the list
most
and
people,
started calling.
And most people do not
know.
And that's why kind of it was very important to provide this as an awareness point for people. There are good people out there that care beyond you just being a number.
Right.
That they are basically figuring out somewhat $19.99 to get you the list or whatever it is, right? And then you get placed, and somebody makes 120% on the high end off that first month of placement, and thank you very much.
Right.
Right? So, you know, we have people in
Elvis has left the building.
Yeah, thank Elvis has left the building. Thank you very much. thank you very much. And, you know, I got to work on that. Okay, we'll come back to that on another show. But... And then all of a sudden, I'm moving on to the next one on my list to cross off.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm going to involve Chris here a little bit more. And Chris, so what goes, I mean, somebody who's not you, the agency who's helping place, okay, but at that home, okay, even the agency, in most cases, what justifies that $120,000? I mean, if it's good service, you should pay for it. But what's involved?
You know, I actually was on a panel with the Nationwide company not that long ago, and I asked them, I charge substantially less than you charge.
Yeah.
They said they do very good marketing, that their marketing is top-notch, and that's why. And whoever partners with they are now with a top-notch marketing company. That was their justification. It's not about care.
Mm-mm.
It's not about the board and care or bigger facility retaining some money to take care of people. It was just about the marketing, and that was it. Nothing else. And I feel good that my company still charges what we charge since the inception.
Okay. So that brings me to something you mentioned to me when we were talking earlier in the week, and you were saying, actually, before I go there, why don't you give people a little bit of background of where you got involved in
this? And I'll make it very brief. My grandparents raised me, and three out of four of them passed away in nursing homes, and they were miserable.
Yeah.
I met my now wife, whose vision was boarding care homes, and maybe that's why we got married. I'm not sure. But anyway, I met her. And
you had no choice.
I had no choice. Great girl. So we have three boarding care homes now, and when I see a well-run facility and something Paul said, dignity is what we can provide the whole family and peace of mind as well. We text, we Skype, we FaceTime with families. So if I can give the whole family peace of mind, sometimes taking care of the elderly person, it's almost the easy part. If someone, you know, mild dementia, very pleasant, but the family, we got to make sure they're okay as well. But how I got into it though, Rod, was having boarding cares myself. I got recruited. I went to Pepperdine, got recruited from the Nationwide company. At that time, there were only two of us advisors on California. And then they kind of kicked me to the curb, and I thought, great, I'm going to take this and make it much more personal than how the Nationwide company. And I didn't even, when I was employed by them, sometimes you're with an employer, you're like, I don't even like their vision. It was 1-800-DENTIST. That was their model. When I was hired, I said, what's your model? It's 1-800-DENTIST. I said, well, you need to take this and find two dentists in Costa Mesa.
Let me just be clear. Sure. We're not talking about 1-800-DENTIST.
No.
This is a model.
No, their model. That was their model.
The business model was based on that.
Which is a good model.
Just call and you get a referral, and they have a referral network, and they all get a fee for referring.
Right. So you drill in your zip code, and you can already just, you know, as an advisor, I can check, you know, the zip code. I can check 40 buildings in that parameter and email you a list without calling them for availability, pricing, ratio of caregiver to resident. It was kind of blind.
Obviously, that's not the 120% placement, but what do they charge for something like that?
What does the referral agency charge? 120% of the first month.
Yeah.
If they get placed.
If you use their list and you place in one of the places to where they referred you, the facility has to pay 60% of the first month and 60% of the second month.
And how do
or
I know?
A big facility charge? Sorry, Paul. Yeah. The big facility charged 90. They get charged 90%.
Paul, before you went in. Okay.
So 90% to a big facility.
I just want to be very clear.
Sure.
Okay. When I'm turning, you know, surfing channels, and I come across something that's advertised on TV or cable or whatever, that's showing that this is a 800 number I need to call for, you know, assistance in placement or housing for elderly or seniors, whatever, for myself, for a parent, what have you, right? Nowhere on there Do I see any of this?
Right, right. It sounds wonderful.
It sounds like almost a...
It's too good to be true.
A philanthropic,
yeah.
You know...
Right. We're going to have right. mom right. settle right. in, and they right. always show
it's
somebody smiling. And,
right.
You
know.
But yet, that is what happens. If you right. actually calling one of those numbers... Get placed or place a loved one in those. That is that's the deal.
That is the deal.
The facility pays
the agency that percentage yeah. of the first 2 months. So the big guys, I guess they think they have a break. They go, they're only paying 90%.
Yeah. Wow.
So only 90% is from that really big fancy building. Gosh
so
knows
where.
So my
question is, how do I know the agency's really going to do a good? So my first reaction is, that's terrible for you guys. You got to pay this kind of referral fee. It's not, as long as I didn't pay, and as long as they did a good job, I'm paying them $1 million. It's my mom. I don't care. But I don't know that, how do I know that they're doing a good job, or they're just placing because that's the one they're going to get the most money from?
Well, they're just placing, Paul. Yeah. They're not, you know, again, yeah. what the difference between the big companies like that and a company like Chris and mine is that we actually take the time to spend with the families, do the assessment,
yeah.
see the client, where they live, where they're at. We find out their history. Because I'm a nurse, I do a full nursing assessment. And then I find places that I think are going to be the best match. But before I do that, I'm online checking their license. If I can't get enough information online, I'm down at licensing pulling their file
wow.
to see what's gone on.
Wow.
Because I'm not going to put my reputation on the line, refer a client somewhere, and have them not cared for.
My favorite
I
question
just
to
won't do it.
Ask the doctors, and always made everybody uncomfortable throughout this whole process, we'd get to some point and it would be awkward and they'd kind of shrug and say, I don't know what to do, you decide, live or die, go here, pay for it however. And I'd say, what would you do if this was your mother?
Sure.
And they'd all go, I gotta go.
And that is a great
absolutely.
question. Would you
make
place
personal,
your mom or your
yeah.
father in that place? Very good, very good
well
questions.
And yeah. and this is why exactly why we have these lady and two gentlemen in the room is
yes.
because I wanted to make sure people understood that you have an alternative. Because to me, when I heard that is what is not being, you know,
broadcast
in a rolling disclaimer line at the bottom of the screen while I'm watching this very emotional, heart-tugging thing going on in front of me, and I want to pick up the phone and go, okay, I'm covered. If I have a loved one that ever needs anything, I'm just going to call this number, and all of my whole life will continue to be the way it is.
Yeah,
everybody's going to take care of, right?
Yeah.
It's the silver bullet that's going to take care of everything. Sorry, probably not a good analogy. Yeah.
At times, my dad wanted a silver bullet. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
the other thing, talk about, we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left here. Talk about the different kinds of levels of care. Because
yeah,
I was shocked
sure.
as I got into this. There are long-term nursing facilities. There are assisted living facilities on the other end.
Right.
Sometimes there's now group homes, and there's other halfway kind of measures. And talk about some of that.
Sure. You can go ahead. We have something called Title 22. So assisted living, most of them can take someone to the end of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bathing, grooming, medication management, purifying someone's food or pureeing someone's food. You know, the feeding thing gets a little weird with the whole feeding. So boarding carriers cannot do feeding tubes, ventilators, and then bed sores is a big one.
Heard,
and diabetic
yeah.
care is a little gray area now as well, but I think assisted living and smaller boarding care homes, and Sandy, you can help me out here, can take someone to the end of life, and that still means they can get a morphine drip
right.
via hospice. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seemed like there were gradations. Like you said, there was a boarding care. They can only do, you got to be in really good shape, and then if you get worse, you go into assisted living. If you get worse, you get into a full nursing home where you're in a bed, basically, and
right.
warehoused, and some you're unable to do it. And then the other shock is if you have any sort of special need, Alzheimer's is one, Parkinson's in my mother's case, any kind of dementia. And we had somebody on one of our other shows, Jim McAleer from the
Alzheimer's
Association, who said by the time, with the length of our lives, probably 50%, 60%, 70% of people are going to have some sort of dementia by the
yeah.
time they die.
Right, right.
And that's a whole other special facility in big bucks.
Well, and again, you know, it comes down to this. People are put into these situations, they find themselves in these situations, they're not prepared for these situations, they're looking at it, and the reality of the price tag hits them in the face like that, right? And now I'm trying to make decisions that are both based on what is best interest, emotionally, support-wise, or whatever. But I also have a very real thing called, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Which in,
am I going to finance mortgage my house to pay for my dad's last 2 years?
Right. And
people
so,
do.
And so even if you make a decision to go into a facility that maybe is not full service, because you're making it based on that, the surprise then comes when you realize that maybe the special needs that that loved one needs are not going to be able to be provided in that facility.
And I'll go another thing I learned, statistic. It used to be the statistic was that by, if they go into a facility, it's no more than, I think, 3 years or something like that. It's gotten longer because people are living longer and better, lucky us, better medicines and all the stuff. So your dad that went in and had a stroke and you think, well, he'll stay here for 2 or 3 years, might stay here for 10 years.
Right. And it's all every month. And it's coming out of somebody's savings because in most cases there isn't something that's covering it.
Right.
And that's going back to that bill that we were talking about is I think, Sandy, you were saying that it would get some form of payment will happen.
Actually, there's a second situation based on the Olmstead Act, which we talked about earlier, which now Medi-Cal will actually assist in paying for people to be in assisted living. Orange County is the last county to get that. We got it about a year ago.
I didn't say that again. So Medi-Cal, if you take down all your money,
it's a waiver program.
It's been around since 2008. It's now available in Orange County. It's been approved till 2016. The problem is the state now has run out of money to more or less market this program.
Right.
So no one knows about it. The facilities that could get this waiver in place so that they could take Medi-Cal clients, they have no idea that the waiver is available to them.
Well, but you're saying to me, Sandy, too, in some cases, they don't even want to go there.
And they don't want to go there because they don't feel they're going to make enough money. And I think I told you, I came back at this group of board and care owners and I said, listen, this is your insurance policy because the bottom line is you're going to run out of clients that can pay you $6,000 a month.
Yeah.
One day it's going to happen. Yeah. And you're going to be really lucky that you have this waiver in place so that you can at least get something for caring.
And Medi-Cal, as I understood, because we were looking at that, you have to get their life savings have to be down to some low figure, $3,000.
Like $2,000.
Yeah, they basically have to have nothing. But, you know, the amazing thing is that it now means that people that had to live in a nursing home behind a curtain with a bed and a nightstand can now live in the community.
Yes.
And instead of Medicare paying, instead of Medi-Cal paying all that money on a daily basis to the nursing home, they're going to pay a lot less to an assisted living community.
Gotcha.
And that person gets to live in a community.
Sense. Right. It makes perfect sense.
The last question, I'm sorry, because this came up with my aunt right now. We're trying to decide this. She has, I don't want to disclose too much of her money, but let's say she has, whatever, I'll pick a figure. She has $20,000 or something or whatever. She doesn't have a lot of money or whatever. And so I thought, okay, so if it comes to that, we'll just pay off all our bills and blah, 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 and we'll bring it, we'll drive her assets down to $2,000. They said, oh, no. We got it. They go back 2-3 years. You can't just play this trick and suddenly pay it
That's
down.
That's correct.
So we're debating, and she looks at me and she says, you want me to pay down everything till I have $2,000? That's nuts. That's not the way I grew up in the World War II generation.
Right.
You have saving. Well, but if you have those savings, we're going to have to give them to them and then... See what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And
we got to prepare now to get her
That's
down.
Right.
Well,
that's
so
right.
Advance, as early as you can, deal with this unpleasantly Absolutely. Is a lot better in my mind than having to be faced by it and having no choice of how to deal with it.
So she'd be better at 92 to have no assets, and then if she had to, Medi-Cal would pay for this assisted living.
Social Security pays for room and board, and Medi-Cal will pay for the care. But she has to be placed in a community that takes the benefit, and she has to meet the requirements for the benefit in regards to her care needs.
Yeah. Well, we got like 2 minutes left here.
Okay. So I want to make sure that everybody who's listening in, first of all, I want to thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Rod.
Powerful discussion.
That's great.
And I want to thank
you
for letting me come from behind the curtain speaker. I know this is
Paul's
a great show. I just felt it was important to have somebody who's been through this to speak up because you're not ready for it.
No.
No, and you're the poster child.
I'm the poster child.
You're
it.
And actually, our very first conversation together when we were debating whether we should have the show or not, It was exactly that. This stuff really needs to come out and be discussed, and be discussed around the dinner table or the lunch table or whatever, Sunday lunch or whatever.
Barbecue. And you got to plan. You got to know what you got to have a doomsday plan. You got to have an emergency plan in place, and you can't just say, well, we'll figure it out when they fall.
Well, and if possible, be in it together. Not something that you feel you need to hide and then take care of on your own. I mean, that's the whole point here as a community, is to, as a family or support system, whatever people we have around, to make that part of their, you know, part of our relationship, so to speak.
The ugliest part of the whole thing is I had clients who fired me during those periods of time here. I was doing PR before that because I was gone for extended period of time. And we love you, Paul, but you're not here. And I thought, that's like the cruelest irony of all. I got to choose between my business, my life, my family, my personal assets, and my parents who took care of me and gave me everything here.
So I'll tell you what, Paul.
Make these trade-offs.
You give me the list of the name of those companies, and I'm going to basically say they have to pay us 120% or we don't release the list.
That's right. I like that.
Okay. For not to release the list. Uh-huh. But anyway, all joking aside, I want to make sure that everybody who's listening knows how to get hold of you guys.
Sure.
So I'll start with Sandy, if you can tell.
Yes, it's All-Inclusive Senior Advisors, www.allinclusivesenioradvisors.com, 888-454-9891. And I will tell you that I'm not sure if Chris does this, but we also do geriatric case management services. So that is one of the things we can do. We can meet with families to start having those conversations. That's one of the things I do
help.
As a nurse.
That would help.
To sit down and really start talking about.
Do you do it just in this county or in other places?
I can do it any place anybody needs me.
Okay.
Thank you, Sandy.
Thank
Chris.
You.
Sure. And we are 866-MY-SENIOR, 866-697-3646. And it's SoCalSeniors.com is our website.
And thank you, Chris, and thank you, Sandy, Rob. And Greg. This is really great.
Thank you very
much
for
talking
to us.
We'll post some of this information out on social media as well in case you didn't catch it. Thanks for joining us this week, and we look forward to seeing you guys next week as well.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.